Welcome to the next edition of Business Law Focus. Great having you with us. And I'm joined by Bradley Conradi and Sarah Berger. And Bradley is owner of BCHC Attorneys. And Sarah Berger is a director at Horizon Forensics. And welcome to the show. Now, you guys have both been through a really tough little period. Happened prior to the elections, but you were both arrested. You had to apply for bail. It was, in some cases, a very elongated period in jail for you. I mean, and this is all goes back to your investigation of corruption, and specifically at the Fort Hare University. Some of it was how degrees were being dished out, and you know, internally there were, you've got a lot of evidence that were put on the table. However, you were sitting at work having a cup of coffee, and suddenly you had 20 armed national task team members arriving, right? You were hushed off on a private plane and to East London, I believe it was, and because obviously it's Eastern Cape issue, and, you know, were put in jail, and it became a really nasty episode for you. And obviously you are, in some degrees, you are investigating forensically corruption, right, which you've got evidence. It's fact-based. You producing that evidence, you supplying it with the authorities as you should, and obviously with your client who wants to get to the bottom of what happened. But maybe tell us about, you know, so you are whistleblowers in some respect as well. I mean, this case and the way you were treated seems like it's going to be pretty off-putting for people to want to be whistleblowers in South Africa right now when you have this type of thing playing out, right?
Absolutely. I think it's important to say that we started in 2018 with investigations, and we've been producing reports since 2018, right up until the day that we were arrested. We were still doing work on a matter for the university. We've provided all of those reports to all of the law enforcement authorities over the years. We have got terabytes of information. I mean, just one of our businesses has over 350 files on work that has been done. So an extensive amount of investigation has been done over a protracted period of time, and it was done in conjunction with every major law enforcement agency in the country. At the end of that, we find ourselves, due to the targets, which included Nigerian syndicates who have been running the university since 2010, well, not running the university, running all kinds of scams there, employees, local businesses, and politicians. All of them have been involved. And I think it's also important to mention that the narrative in the media now is, you know, almost the university has been captured by this corrupt group of people. We were brought in 2018 because there was corruption. And we have pretty much probably cleaned up 60 to 70% of it. We were on our way to actually achieving what we had set out to do in 2018. But we now find ourselves ostracized. You know, I've been 25 years I've been an attorney. For 15 of those years, I've been regarded as one of the top lawyers in this country by international rating agencies. And yet I find myself following the action taken against us, you know, treated basically as a criminal. And the same applies on the forensic side. And I think Sarah may be able to just give you a taste of what happens to people that do what we do, which we have done in the interest of the country. And just before I hand over to Sarah, when we produced the report on Mabuyane, I turned to her because we work in teams, we work together, but she was the principal investigator. I finalized the report and I said to her, I want to look at me. You got to appreciate something. You release this report today, your life may change forever. But those were prophetic words in 2021, 2022, whenever we did the report. I said to her, so our choice is you throw it in the bin and we found nothing, or we release it. And we both instantly said, we both attorneys, we both officers of the court, we have a duty to our profession, to the country, to do the right thing. So we made the decision to send it out. And literally as we pressed send to the people it had to go to, we said, well, here it goes.
And you mentioned Oscar Mabuyane, right, who was, I mean, I know there have been stories around that, and he's, you know, trying to get a master's degree, and that was part of the investigation, right? So I understood. Thanks. So, Sarah, you were also, I mean, obviously thrown into jail, right? I mean, it was a highly traumatic circumstance.
Yeah. I was sitting at my desk working like an ordinary day. And in fact, it was just before the long weekend. We had jeans on. We were going to go for have a nice lunch with everyone at the office as a send-off for Easter. And, you know, 20 guys arrive at the office. You know, absolutely shocking. People that I've worked with in the past, the police. And I was guarded by all these, R5 rifles. My colleague was in absolute tears because she had no clue what was going on. And I had to try and pacify her while trying to, you know, remain sort of strong in all of this. And then taken, by jet to East London. I kept on thinking while I was laying in the cells in Milnerton that night, waiting for my jet to arrive, that this is actually going to end now. This is not real. It cannot be. There must be somebody that is coming to the rescue here. But alas, it is not. It is not the way it turned out. So I spent 5 nights in jail, laying on a concrete floor, humiliated, searched twice a day. Many, many things that I can't go into now because we'll be dealing with that in due course that were extremely humiliating and degrading. And I think this is just, unfortunately, you think that when you come out on bail that the pain will be over, or at least you'll have some reprieve in between. We've just been getting blow after blow after blow, and we can go into that in a bit. But yeah, It's just not been an easy ride.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to you, the evidence that you have, right? I mean, we want to have, I mean, when you look at whistleblowing, we've got many acts for whistleblowing, PDA and PRECA, and there's a whole lot. The Constitution, of course, protects people. I mean, you're not quite whistleblowers. You're obviously doing a forensic report, but in a way, you actually are. And you need to conduct that in a good faith manner, right? And you guys, how much evidence do you actually have? I mean, from what I've heard and read is you've got like a terabyte or more. I don't know, but there's hard evidence out there, right, that you're basing it on. I mean, this is not something that you're just putting out there for any other purpose besides these are the facts, guys.
Well, I can speak for BCHE. We've just returned to the university 350 lever arch valves.
Sure.
I mean, that is work done over a period of 6 years. Sarah can tell you on her side how much information she has in her possession.
I think, and I'm sorry, this does bring a lot of anger for me because I find it very, very insulting when the accusation is that, for instance, that the no work was done. The kind of energy that you have to dedicate to an investigation, you literally have to get into the mind of the subject that you are working on. So when we as a team and when I finalize and when I send it to Bradley for checking, I'm completely immersed in the lifestyle of that person. I've gotten to know the subject. And I've almost taken on some of the darkness that went with it as well. So when we say we've lodged probably about 20 criminal complaints. There's more than 100 people. I've done a tally this week, but it's definitely more than 100 people that are implicated. And that's external service providers, internal employees, students from various scams, businesses. And so it's a very dark day for me when I hear people saying that we didn't do the work and invest the energy. I didn't have a scrap of time available because we were being instructed on so many matters. But, you know, all of these cases hang in limbo now, and we're just trying to find an organization, a civil society organization, where we can even support and provide witness support to take these matters forward, because otherwise you're going to have more than 100 people walking free.
What action needs to be taken? I mean, ideally, you've given the evidence through the right channel. You've done the research, hard research. You faced the consequences, of course, prior to the election, which were terrible. But what needs to happen? I mean, we've got so many SIUs, Hawks. We've got the NPA, of course, who's starting to do some really good work. We've got task teams, etc., national, provincial level. We've got all these different units that are there to help and support and drive and bust corruption, right? We keep hearing about as the main theme. But so what actually needs to happen to get these guys moving to kind of just action this stuff? And 100 people, I mean, that's significant. That would be a huge bite out of the corruption problem in South Africa.
Well, the NPA, unfortunately, needs to prosecute the individuals involved. And as we've said, since I think 2019 was the first case that we have laid. And if you looked, as I've stated, at the affidavits and you look at the annexes, all the work is done. These things are trial ready.
Yeah.
All that needs to happen is that action needs to be taken. And in these cases, there are no investigations that are required. But we do sense that there is some urgency coming forward now. And despite our lives being turned upside down and all the turmoil, we remain committed till today to assisting them with those cases, despite being on the receiving end of what we are. You know, this became our lives. This became part of our responsibility to the country. We can't all stand around the fire with a beer and talk about it, and then you do nothing. We've done this at great expense to our safety. You know, we haven't been to East London in years other than by private jet. The last time we went, I had to spend an absolute fortune on bodyguards because we've been threatened over the years. People forget that two people were murdered. One of them was a witness of ours in a case. And I said, these are serious things, and we remain committed to assisting despite how we feel about what's happening. Otherwise, this over 100 people are going to walk free. And you're talking about people who have worked for 30 years for the university, and we've only investigated them for a period of 3 years because there was only information available. This is only what we could find through limited resources. And individuals have made 24 million rand. There's a 14 million rand. An employee that earned 12,000 rand a month had over 6.1 million rand flow through a bank account. I mean, these people are laughing after what has happened to us. It must have been the biggest celebration for them because, you know, without us, are you going to run these cases? So the pace is picking up, and we believe that the NPA in East London is committed to doing it. Obviously, resource problems. We've worked with wonderful people. I mean, and it's not a once-off meeting. We're talking about regular meetings over the years. The officers involved have been committed. But somewhere in that whole process, and I think it may even lie in the courts, that the cases just get jammed up and you never get to move to the next case because nothing is functioning properly.
If I can just add to that, you know, we can't treat Preka as a symbol to say, well, we've complied with our duties. I know they've now made it, you know, investigators and attorneys' responsibilities as well with change in legislation. I haven't gone to go study those provisions. But we can't just simply say we've ticked the box. Now, we were audited by PwC at the university for the years 2019 to 2023. And about a week before I was arrested, PwC followed up on a couple of the matters and we provided an update from both businesses, the firm and Horizon. But it doesn't help us if we say we've committed 6 years of our lives and we've ticked all the boxes, you know, all the Preka complaints are in, but there are no consequences. And I think that is why we are likening ourselves to whistleblowers, because we're saying, people, come out. Who wants to assist and take these matters on? If there's no capacity or no appetite at the NPA, and I'm not saying that is the case, but if it is the case, let us bring a private prosecution. Let us take these people on and bring them to book.
And corporate South Africa needs to come to the party as well. We are fortunate, I mean, for we have probably two or three of the top 10 listed companies as clients of ours. We're not a fly-by-night business that was just doing work for the university all of a sudden. They need to come to the party, and instead of turning their backs on people like us, which fortunately, to be fair, has not happened, we're talking about, as I said, top 10 listed companies. Many of them have said, we don't believe it because we have worked with you and your team for so long. We know what your morals and your ethics are. And they've stayed with us. I've got a meeting coming up now in half an hour with a big corporate. But then there are those who will just go quiet and they will not use you. And that's all punishment. You know? We built up big businesses going back from 2010, long before Fort Hague came along. But what you see is, you know, how your business starts tapering off because you stepped forward and did the right thing. No one wants to touch you based on you know, one or two bad reports which we didn't even have a chance to respond to. Not that I think it would have made a difference. So that entire mindset needs to change. You're still innocent until proven guilty. And if we can't change that, well then, you know, what is the use of anyone coming forward when you stand to lose everything that you own and that you worked for? You know, we have employees, we have a nice sized team of people, and we have to reassure them that we are still in business. They all support us, you know, but we had one or two casualties, but that happens. But that is all because of what has happened for the stance that we took.
And of course, you mentioned you were threatened, right? Have there been any new threats? Are you concerned that there is still that risk, that security risk?
That won't go away. It will increase because our risk was always from the people that we were dealing with. As I said to you, you're talking about syndicates that have infiltrated the university. We think from about 2011, and the type of scams that they were running, the amount of money that they were sucking out of the institution. We've put a stop to it, absolute stop to it. We found all of them. They started running for cover, but our lives remain in danger, you know, because if we have to testify in those cases, which we will do if the circumstances are right, you know, then we will become targets again. And I don't think I'm going to see the all the police coming out to protect us in the way they can to arrest us. But definitely, I mean, we were nearly assassinated a few years ago in East London on our way. It was the first time we returned after one of the murders. And we were on our way to a huge two-day workshop with the SIU. And we agreed and we said, you've got to send us some kind of security, which wasn't very effective. It wasn't real bodyguards, etc. And we were extremely vigilant. And because of our vigilance, we managed to avoid. We had a group of men run towards us and you know, throw firearms. And we managed to pull our car away at high speed. Jeez. So, you know, this is real. And then we didn't return again. And because of the role that we've played, I mean, we would say straight, we will go to Port Elizabeth, yes. And you'd have 20, 30 people flying from all over the country just to meet with us so that they could understand from us what was happening. I mean, this happened on a regular basis. I would have 15 people from the SIU sitting in my office for 2-3 days, and we'd be taking them through detailed evidence. So this is not a case of us, oh, now we've been caught out for doing something wrong, and we're saying, you know, we whistleblowers. I actually took photographs in my office before we removed all the files, so that anybody wants to see can show them, here's the work that actually took place over the years.
Now, just in conclusion, of course, I mean, you've been through a really tough period here and still are, right? You can't just willy-nilly start arresting people like this. You're going to be, in turn, taking action. We do have a constitution that protects our human rights and various rights, of course, but would likely be taking action in turn, right?
There's no doubt about that. We've already instructed our lawyers to notify the state as you require to, that we will be suing them for a host of violations of our constitutional rights. I made a comment on a previous program that the Bill of Rights is effectively, well, it's been on life support when it comes to socioeconomic rights for years, but this is our first experience when it comes to your rights associated with, you know, criminal law, your liberty, et cetera, and due process. It does not exist. It does not exist. And that needs to be addressed. It can only be addressed if there are appropriate consequences, which the Constitutional Court needs to set the direction for, that if you're going to arrest somebody and not read them their rights, there will be consequences, like you'd find in the United States. That doesn't happen. If you're arrested unlawfully and you spend a weekend in jail, you know, don't offer the person 5,000 rand or 10,000 rand. Yeah, pay them 5 million rand. Let the police learn. Hold the ministers personally liable. Because the idea with the Constitution is that the principles of the Bill of Rights will flow from the Constitutional Court to the SCA, to the High Court, to the magistrates, to the police. That has not happened. So you have a court sitting there right on top, which will cost you 3 to 5 million rand to get to, if you're lucky enough. On the ground, there is no respect for the Constitution. I mean, I'll say one thing. Sarah was denied the right to a lawyer as an attorney herself. Written on her farm, no access allowed, not even to a lawyer. Now, that, I don't think you need to say anything more than that.
Trampling on it, I think, is an appropriate term. And I think on that note, a lot needs to be done, and not good to hear when this thing happens. But thanks very much for the frank discussion. And I think there's a lot of issues here. There's still some processes that will run through the courts, and we'll certainly be watching that. So thanks very much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And your pleasure. Thank you very much.